Judith Onkwo is a technology evangelist, a business psychologist, and a co-founder of We Will Lead Africa. In 2016, Judith set up IMSI 3D Creation Lab, which is building the ecosystem of extended reality technologies in Lagos, Nigeria. So please welcome Judith, and let's have her talk.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you all for coming today. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the work that we're doing in Lagos, Nigeria, just generally about that, and then about some specific projects that we've been involved in. So, usually when I'm speaking, people say, wow, you're doing virtual reality in Nigeria? How come? Why? How did you even think of starting that there? I'm going to tell you a little bit about that journey. Now, I don't know if many people here have been to Nigeria, but just to give you some context, it's a country in the western part of Africa. Right now, the population is estimated to be about 190 million people, so there are a lot of us. The projection is that by 2050, though, we will be the third most populous country in the world, right? Third after China first and India second. It's also a country of lots of different cultures and lots of different languages. At last count, there were well over 200 of these, so very diverse. So, in terms of VR, we started a creation lab there in Lagos called IMSI 3D. IMSI is a Yoruba word, and Yoruba is the language of the Yoruba people who you find in the southwestern part of Nigeria. The word means inspiration. We started out really small. I got a computer, a VR-ready computer, a few headsets, a few books on virtual reality, and set up in one of the leading hubs in Lagos called the Co-Creation Hub. So basically, that's what it was. That was the start. A desk in a corner where we said, hey, if you're even remotely curious about this technology, if you want to know what's possible with it, then come on down. Because as you probably remember, in 2016, a lot of people were saying, this is the year of virtual reality. There was a lot of expectation that it would come into its own in some way, and there was a lot of excitement about it. And we felt that that was a story that we needed to be a part of as well, for a number of reasons that I'll explore. So in Nigeria, if you think about the country, well, say 5-10 years ago, certainly we weren't on the, you know, on the global map for being creators. We were in some fields. So, for example, you would always be able to mention super talented Nigerian authors, for example. But when it came to technology, I don't think we were being thought of as creators a lot, even though a lot of creativity was happening, even though a lot of innovation was happening in the country. And there's been a real drive, a real need to shift that narrative from one of consumption, where we're just a market where electronics technology is being sold, to one where we are actually adapting these technologies and using them for our own purposes, making them work for us as well. So being able to move that needle from consumption to creation. So back to the start. We began on the first week of July in 2016. And that first week, we had a virtual reality showcase. This is a picture from the event. We asked people to come, you know, if you're curious, if you've never tried it before, if you're wondering what this word that everybody's been talking about is. And that day, over the course of about 5 hours, we had about 100 people come down to try out VR, talk about VR, find out what the possibilities might be with this technology, figure out if it's for them. And what's really interesting for me personally is that back then in 2016, that summer, when we had people come into our space, probably 90% of them had never tried out virtual reality before. They maybe heard about it, might have seen a Google Cardboard here or there, but you know, they didn't really know what it was. Today, when I have events like this, at least half of the people coming in, at the very least half, would have tried out VR. So it's just great to see, even with time and with activity, how things can change. But on this day in 2016, we had people come in and, you know, they were challenged to think about what is possible with this technology. But then it seemed like a lot of talk. You know, you come in, you put on a few headsets, you try the Samsung Gear VR, you maybe try a Google Cardboard, you start to talk, but then what next? And that's something that we really wanted to make different, you know? Let it not just be talk. We wanted people to know that these were technologies that they should use to create as well. So we decided to have a hackathon. Then, when it held in November 2016, it was the first virtual reality hackathon in Nigeria. And promoting the belief that we have, that these technologies are actually tools that we can use to create solutions, we challenged the participants to think about creating solutions for either education, healthcare, or tourism. Now, we chose these particular sectors because we'd recognize that these are areas in which there was quite a bit of scope for immediate significant impact in a place like Nigeria. And here's what came out of it. And in the picture there, you can see what was the leading hack by the winning team. It was a product that they called LEVRN, but actually spelled L-E-V-R-N. And it's an experience where, as you can see, there's a leap motion attached to a Samsung Gear VR. And it allows you to learn how to code using hand-based gestures. So it was really exciting to see people thinking about how they could push the boundary beyond what was even just traditionally possible with the Gear VR as it was then, and to start thinking creatively about how you might use these technologies and tools to learn. Especially, you know, in disciplines that we're always challenged about how best we can get people to learn and move with the times. Okay, so I've got a few numbers up on the screen. I wonder if anybody knows what they might refer to. Anybody? No? Okay. So the first one, 263 million, is a number from UNICEF from 2014. And then that was their estimate about the number of children who were out of school in the world. The second number, 13.2 million, is a number of out of school children in just Nigeria. And that final number, 1 billion, that's the number of children in the world who don't really have access to good quality education. You might wonder why I have these numbers up right now, and that's because I believe that virtual reality is something that we can use to tackle these kind of statistics. One of the things that we're exploring in Lagos is looking at VR for schools. Now, certainly back in 2016 when we were starting out, quite a lot of the attention with VR was being put into sectors like gaming and entertainment. But as I mentioned, we've been wanting to shift the needle to other sectors to see ways in which we can adapt and use it. And I think that actually VR, despite the, you know, the common perception that it is perhaps elitist, perhaps expensive, in its low-cost form could actually be a solution for education. And this is how it might work. Imagine if we took low-cost VR, something as simple, say, as a Google Cardboard, mobile phones, and we all know the story of mobile phone penetration increasing daily in Africa across the continent. Solar portables, because in some places, electricity from the grid is not reliable. And with that, you have a device that once you have the right content available for it, is an all-in-one learning solution that's fairly portable and can be deployed really just about anywhere. Now for me, this is one of the super exciting possibilities with a technology like virtual reality that we can go into schools or even those 13.2 million out-of-school children go to them and give them a device with the right content that will allow them to start learning, and learning in ways that are not possible. Because if you were to go to a traditional public school, I mentioned we were 190 plus million people, the infrastructure is challenged in terms of trying to deal with that number, and you'll easily have classrooms with over 100 children in them, which means that you're very limited in terms of the interaction that's possible between student and teacher, and also with the amount of infrastructure that you can provide. But as you know, with VR, whether it's a virtual lab where they can do experiments, whether it's the opportunity to visit the pyramids in Egypt, or even to explore the solar system, all of a sudden, opportunities and experiences that would not be available, even if, you know, we suddenly kind of like diverted our whole budget to education, are now possible. And I think that's really exciting. And that's just a picture from one of the schools where we have been going in to explore using virtual reality to supplement the curriculum for education. Education is one possibility, but something else that also excites me about these technologies and what is possible is when it comes to art and culture. This past week, one of the leading African philosophers, a Nigerian woman called Sophie Oluwole, died. And she was a very, very big supporter, promoter of African culture, of Nigerian culture, and of dipping into your heritage to take that what was useful there and bring it and use it to help to define the life that you're living today and the one you want to create for the future. And I particularly like this, that, you know, from one of her papers where she says, it's up to us, and she was really calling out to everyone, to discover and promote a reliable African intellectual atmosphere based on narration, presented in the truth of their language and authenticity. And I bring this up now because I think that that is something else that this technology enables us to, in a sense, convey our reality and tell stories in the truth of our language and authenticity. And I want to tell you about two projects that relate to that. The first is one that brings Nigeria and Switzerland together. So earlier this year, I was approached by the team who run the IAF Festival in Switzerland. It's a festival that is focused on contemporary African art, predominantly photography, and it's held in Basel each year. Now, each year, along with the photographers that are exhibited, they add an element of contemporary art. This year it happened to be virtual reality. And for that, they said, well, what would it be like if we were to juxtapose living in Switzerland, take a city, Basel, and in an African country, Nigeria, let's take a city, Lagos. What would that look like? So what we created was something called Reality Check. It was a very simple VR experience, actually, but one with a lot of potential and possibility. What we did was map out a number of locations. So we took traditional places that you would visit. If you've been to Basel, you know it's quite compact and it's really easy to walk around the center of the town. And we took places like a church, a shopping mall, a school, and mapped these, and then wanted to do the same in Lagos. Now, Lagos is quite widespread, so we chose a particular neighborhood, Yaba, and then did the same. We went to a church, for example, and captured the space with 360 video. And what was then possible was that when you came to this festival in Switzerland, you could go on a walking tour of the city, but alongside that tour of Basel, you could also have one of Lagos. So you could walk to the church in Basel, seen in the picture there, and while there, you would then have an experience of a church in Lagos. We had, you know, over the course of the week that I spent there with them, a whole series of people come around to come and figure out what it might be like to step into a space in Lagos, Nigeria, if only for a few minutes. Now, each of the videos was really short, just about 2 minutes, and I'm actually going to play one for you to see. But what was exciting for the people who tried it out, from what they fed back to us, was just being able to shift your reality in a way that, as we know, is not possible with traditional media, not with the books you read, not with the, you know, videos you watch in 2D. Let me show you one. So here we are. This is the church in Lagos. Let's just get that. And what we did, it's during a weekday, we were able to go in. Where the camera's positioned is up where the choir traditionally sits on Sunday. And it happened to be a day when, it's a Catholic church, by the way, when they were getting ready, I believe it's for a benediction service, so. You can hear some of that going on down there. Here we are in the upper nave. And so this video is much like the others. They were all roughly 2 minutes. The camera was stationary. And what we wanted to create was just the impression that, much like you were doing if you were doing the walking tour where you'd get to a location and stand and look around, that you had that same experience in Lagos, that you walked into, you know, the location in question, you stood at a spot and you were able to look around and observe what was going on for a minute or two. Just give me a second. And that experience that I just showed in the church was also done in locations like a university, a school, a library in Lagos, a bank, a medical center. So just little vignettes, if you will, of life, everyday life in the city that you're able to share. And we're hoping to do the flip later on where in Lagos you will then be able to have the 360 experiences of these locations in Basel for people who are in Lagos. So moving on and exploring art and culture, I have this other quote that I'm sure a lot of people have seen around quite a bit. And I first encountered it in one of Chinua Achebe's novels. It says, there is that great proverb that until the lions have their own historians, the history of the hunt will always glorify the hunter. And of course, you know, we know how this applies in lots of ways. We talk about the way, you know, history might have been told, history as we know it traditionally, might be repurposed if it's told from another perspective for people around the world. But storytelling, I think, is particularly important with 360. And what was exciting for me as well earlier this year is when we had a member of our community, the Mercy Theater community in Lagos, actually go and shoot what was the first 360 documentary. And this is just a short, about 4 or 5 minutes long. But it's the first Nigerian-made 360 documentary in one of the internally displaced people camps that we have in the northeastern part of the country, in Maiduguri. And this short documentary in Bakassi actually tells the story of a boy called Modu, who's an insurgency orphan. He's about 11 years old, but he has lost his father to the issues with Boko Haram in the northeastern part of the country, and his mother as well. So lived with his grandmother in an IDP camp, and you know, was someone who, through whose eyes we could start to understand what it really means to be in that space, to understand that tragedy a little bit more. We had a screening for this short documentary in Lagos in November, but even before that, I think what's really compelling is that we had had people who had even been to IDP camps in the northeast and other parts of Nigeria. And when they came and they experienced in Bakassi, what they would say is, this is even more real than being there. Now, you know, at face value, you might think, well, what are they talking about? And when they broke it down, what they were telling us was that, well, when you're actually there in the camps, you're overwhelmed by all that's going on. There's so much activity, so much noise, so much jostling, that you are not really able to process what's happening around you. But when you have the experience in VR like this, in, through a 360 video, you're then really centered and focused on the experience as it is, on the story that you're hearing, in this case, Modu's. So I'm going to just play a little bit from the screening, not the documentary itself, for you to see what it was like sharing that work with people in Lagos.
Watching the documentary was intensely moving, I think, because I had a phenomenally different experience watching it in VR. There's the ability to look all around you and really feel like you are immersed in the scene. I felt like I was, you know, in the camp and almost going through what the little boy is going through. So that was an interesting feeling that was different from watching a regular film.
Okay, so I've talked a little bit about some of the projects that we've done or been involved in the space with art and culture, looking at things like telling 360 stories or being able to share our reality across different geographies. I want to talk a little bit more now about kind of like the future and where we see ourselves going. I have the words bright future there because I think we all agree that these technologies hold a lot of promise. But there are particular challenges for us in a place like Nigeria, and one of them is, you know, even just access to the hardware. So one of the things that we are exploring is, what would it be like if we were able to, you know, actually deal with that obstacle? What if we created a VR headset that was purpose-built for our locale, an all-in-one solar-powered VR headset, one that's made with locally sourced materials? How would that change things? Is that something that we are trying to do a design challenge around? We started one last year, but tried to do it virtually. We'll be looking at in the new year, having a team come in to work on this and attempt to build one. Now, if we can do that, it becomes really exciting for us because, yes, we have platforms like YouTube where you can share 360 content, and Vimeo and others, but not a lot of people have access to headsets and other elements of the technology, and we can start to do something about that actively. So, looking at ways in which we can build and, you know, do R&D to suit our purposes is something that's very big for us. We're also working really hard to build a community of content creators, people who will work with these technologies, the people who will create the educational content that will make VR for schools a reality in a country like Nigeria. For that, we have started to hold community meetups. They've been running for over a year now. We held the very first one at the Google office in Lagos, and have since, you know, had the community grow with people coming from all sorts of different sectors, from the arts, you know, from technology, people from business as well, who are even looking at the opportunities to commercialize the technology locally. And we're excited about what's possible when all of these people come together. We're also trying to connect communities across Africa because we know that it's one thing to try and build communities locally and grow expertise there, but if we're joined up together across the continent, a lot more will be possible a lot quicker. Earlier this year, we held what was at that time the largest VR event on the continent, where we had a hackathon happen simultaneously across 7 countries. We had over 35 teams take part, and the overall winning team was a team of 3 females from Egypt. And much like that first one that I mentioned in 2016, where we said create for education or healthcare or tourism, we asked the teams to do the same. So create for education, healthcare, tourism. However, this time we added the environment. It happened around Earth Day, and also social justice. The winning team created an experience that allows you to learn about how to take care of the environment, and it was built for the HTC Vive. We also have a growing community that is online on Facebook. They come from over 20 different African countries. It's over 900 strong and growing every day. We're really excited about the possibilities as we all come together and start to figure out how we can work and create. We believe collaboration is our future. Whether it's across these African countries or further across the world, the work that we did with Switzerland, whether it's being here and connecting with you all. But we know that together we can do so much more. I usually end my talks with this challenge to people, particularly when I'm talking about using the technologies for the first time. Very, very excited to know that the future is ours to create. And with things like VR and AR solutions, create in a way that maybe we're not yet imagining, but perhaps we should. So what will you do? I want to leave you with one last video that shows what it's like in the lab. Thank you.
have time for Q&A, and there are two microphones here in the room, one in the middle, microphone number two, and one out to the side, microphone number one, and there might also be questions from the internet. So please come up, and we have already a question from microphone number two.
Hello, so thanks for the presentation.
Hello.
There is a concept, I don't know how validated it is, but of the innovator dilemma. Basically, if you're already in a comfortable spot, you're not going to push yourself too much, being either a community or a company. So the incumbent, you have either a new player that's going to make something radical and going to challenge and make something better. And there was some discussion on this, on how, for example, maybe you'll not need the ADSL or fiber infrastructure if you just use 3G or 4G. And that in some community without that infrastructure, maybe, for example, you do mobile payment, like in China, for example. Could this kind of usage of VR for education be an equivalent of this, that maybe the classroom as we have now is pretty good, but if you are so challenged that you need to go much further, like new opportunities, new, much better way to do it?
So thank you for the question. Yes, actually, I think it might be. And you know, you gave some examples about how leapfrogs have happened in other parts of the world, apart from the West, just because they have access technology at a time that's later than the West, and so they've been able to kind of like evolve in a way that doesn't have to be anchored in the legacy, you know, the history of the technology and how it actually grew. I think the same is true for a technology like virtual reality being used for education. And I think that because, you know, the public schools I mentioned where you might easily have over 100 kids in a classroom, you'll be in a space that is not like the modern classroom in a private school in Lagos or, you know, or one in the West. It's not like, you know, where you have maybe a 1 to 20 or 1 to 10, you know, teacher-student ratio. It won't have all of the infrastructure that aids learning as we know it today. So you are then challenged to think really creatively about what you might do with VR, what you might do with whatever tool is brought to you. And that's why, you know, we're thinking about the low-cost, you know, VR that might be mobile device driven or something powered in a similar way, because we know one of the challenges will be power, you know, as we know it, because from the grid there, it's a challenge. And I think as you start to innovate around those realities and create, then yes, we will be able to leapfrog and potentially redefine what education looks like, certainly in that space.
And we have a question from microphone number one.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I've read a number of studies where people have found that if young children spend too much time in VR, if they're very young, it has a problem with their cognitive development. And I'm wondering if you're thinking about a sort of scaled approach at what age people are working with regular computer graphics and then how they engage with VR.
Absolutely.
In good education.
Thank you very much. Yes. So for the work that we're doing at the moment with VR for schools, we're working with children who are in secondary school. So those are children who are typically from 12 years up. And we're very conscious that there has been some information about the, you know, side effects of VR, but there's not enough data yet. And so we're consciously studying as we're going along. We're about to start a formal pilot in one of these schools where we will actually have a researcher who's working on the ground and documenting as we go on. We are by default limiting, you know, time in VR because we know just from what we know generally about screens and eyes that it won't be great to have extended periods, but we're actively learning as well.
We have another question from microphone number one.
I see that you are working with Unity a lot, but I was wondering, have you also been working with the more open standard of web VR?
We haven't yet worked with web VR, but that is something that we are about to start exploring in the new year.
Cool. We have a question from microphone number two.
Hi, Judith. Thank you for your talk again.
I found it very interesting that and inspiring that you've presented the second talk where We Are was considered like a interesting or important tool to create new narratives, maybe in a rather or historically rather oral-based history culture or a narration culture, and to use it for alternative narrations and create the new historian, as you say, like the maybe the non-colonial historian, if you want. And so I also wondered, as I saw also in your presentation, and this is also my perspective, as I've been working a lot with Goethe Institute, and I've once worked in Kenya with Goethe Institute, and I noticed that like the sort of still the Western platforms and of course the institutions with money are kind of the only places and spaces where these things, that especially the technologic things, can happen due to money reasons, are the only spaces that exist. Basically, for example, in Nairobi, it was like this space that could be used by artists. There's some other spaces in Nairobi, but still it felt like this strong power, maybe even, or infrastructural power that's there. And you've used the Google space, and I saw the Facebook logo and the, certificate. So I wonder, is this anything you feel doubts about, or you just think, okay, we take that money and that's cool, whatever?
No, great question, thank you. It's interesting that you ask, because for me personally, one of kind of like the bugs for me is that a lot of the major tech companies, in my opinion, they don't see African countries as a real VR market or AR market, and you know, you can see that just by the fact that their products aren't even accessible there, you know, and they're not available. That said, you know, I think that I talked about collaboration a lot. I think that the way forward is for us all to work together. They already have done, you know, a ton of work in terms of what is possible with the technology and even what will be possible in the future just by virtue of their R&D budgets and what's possible. So I very much want, as we grow, that we are working with them and not apart from them in any way. But alongside that, I am very, very concerned about us, you know, developing as ourselves and creating as ourselves. You know, it goes to that truth and authenticity that Sophia Luwale was talking about, that we have our own voice and we can do it without being obliged to any one party. In that vein, for example, the lab that we set up, one of the reasons was because we knew that access is difficult. We know that the equipment is relatively expensive, things like that, particularly given the purchasing power of the Naira. So we wanted to create a space where if you wanted to do VR or you wanted to create, you could actually come in and use the equipment, and we provide that in city, and we'll be doing that in more states across Nigeria. But I think it's initiatives like that locally that will make sure that even as we partner, we can be true to ourselves.
We have a question from microphone number one.
Thank you for your talk. I'm sorry if you already covered this aspect. I came a bit late, but I want to ask about if you're working towards minimizing the digital divide. What are your thoughts about closing this? Mm-hmm. I understand that the project is new, but your long-term vision, how does that help to empower the rural population also?
Yeah, thank you, that's a great question. Actually, one of the things that drove the creation of the lab in 2016 was even recognition of that digital divide. By that time, I'd spent about, you know, 2 years in Lagos working within the tech sector and just being able to kind of like tap into the talent that was there and see what was possible. And I'd seen what, you know, young people were able to do there with traditional technology, you know, with software development and all of that. So I knew that in terms of, you know, a potential, it was there in a kind of like limitless way. But the challenge is always, of course, access to the resources, to opportunity and things like that. And that's what we try to do, which is why that element of community is so important for us. We we provide access to equipment and resources in the lab. We also hold those community gatherings so that people can start to network with each other and collaborate together. We also look for ways to support learning and growth, and we do that by either holding activities or sometimes doing things like offering scholarships for Audacity's virtual reality nano degree. But we're very, very particular about, you know, talent and expertise being available kind of like locally and in country, because that's critical. That's why, I don't know if you were here when, you know, we were talking about Imbacassity 360 documentary. But for me, what's really exciting is that, you know, a Nigerian, you know, filmmaker will go acquire those skills and be able to be the one to make that in Nigeria. Because of course, there have been other 360 documentaries made by, say, Al Jazeera, for example, you know, and other media houses. But of course, they'll be bringing their teams in to do that. So yes, very, very conscious of trying to narrow that.
We have two questions at microphone number one. Let's take the first one.
First of all, thank you, Judith, for this great presentation.
Thank you.
Very short question and specific question. When it comes to VR in education, there is one major problem in my eyes. I don't know if you can answer to this question, but there is no real business model for that right now. And when it comes to integrate VR content into educational program, there is one major hurdle, which is how to integrate that into official program. Mm. How to put content and be transformed into VR content. Mm-hmm. Are you working closely with regular, what, let's say, official education authorities? Mm-hmm. Is any boards trying to identify which content and how to integrate it progressively mm-hmm. into your curriculums? Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about that? Because there is some nice attempts, like in Egypt, in China, mm-hmm. to do that, but one of the major hurdles is it is very hard to integrate it one time into a real official curriculum. So how do you identify the content and how it is working with the officials?
Thank you. Really great question. I mean, all of the things that you've just mentioned, very, very real issues for us. When we wanted to start doing the VR for Schools project, the first thing that we actually had to do was approach the education authorities in the local area where we are, the district office for education. So we had to bring them on board really quickly because we even need their permission to be able to go into a school and work. Beyond that, we also started to whole things like VR for Education roundtables, where we would bring together different stakeholders. So these would be people from both the local government, from both secondary and tertiary education, and looking at both students, faculty, and sometimes even parents, because we very much wanted people to come together to help us co-create what a viable solution would be. And a lot of what you mentioned, I mean, that's what the teachers were saying. How exactly does this actually work, you know, with a lesson? You know, do you, in the middle of a lecture, put on the headset? What, you know, what makes sense? So far, we've been doing the VR sessions as special sessions that are carved out from the school time, where we go and say, we're coming to do a session with you. Going into the new year, though, where we're going to actually start a formal pilot in a school, we're setting up a lab in the school, and we're going to have somebody who's, you know, there with them, so that we can start to work with the teachers to see how we can make VR learning an element of the traditional kind of like classroom plan. So I say to people, imagine what it used to be like when, you know, you would schedule a video as part of a lesson. What if instead of, you know, the whole class going to watch a video, instead they were going to go and have a VR experience. As to content and the challenge around that and what's appropriate to create, that's really, really interesting, something that we've been trying to tackle. When we first started to explore this, we were quite constrained in terms of resources. So we were just curating what was actually already available and matching it to the national curriculum for the junior secondary school. So we have some content that we have seen can match to some of the learning outcomes that are there at the moment, but we know that we do have to create custom content. We particularly have to create content that is much more accessible for people locally, both in terms of language and in terms of kind of like the visuals that they are, you know, accessing there. We are working with a major education publisher as well in Nigeria, and of course they have the expertise, having created, you know, quite a few of the textbooks that are in schools currently to help us figure that out, as well as collaborating with teachers in the pilot school.
And please don't be shy. If you have any questions, please come up to the microphones and share them with all of us. We have time enough for quite a few more questions. There's a question from mic number two.
Yes, thank you, Judith, for taking all that journey. I have a different question, but I also missed the first minutes of your talk. As I see your talk here, also because the contribution from the Global South, enriching us hopefully with your cultural perspective. And my question is, do you think that this technology could help also to bridge like cultural understanding? Does it support empathy to get more of a picture? Well, the trouble from a Western perspective is that, you know, the African countries exporting poverty, that's not a major good selling good. Mm-hmm. But there is other elements that might enrich, or you might have to hack into our minds. My question is, do you think this technology can actually help to support people understanding other cultures better? Mm-hmm. Or is this for the moment more an experimental thing within your control and cultural context to do your own educational or other purposes?
Thank you for that question. Yes, actually, I do think that it will help us start to understand and experience other cultures better and even experience empathy. And I say this because even just, you know, when we first started the lab in 2016, so a challenge for Nigerians, you might not know, but one major challenge that people have when they want to travel is getting visas, you know, and the stories you hear about visa refusals can be quite heartbreaking. But people would put on the VR headset and sit in a chair, and if, you know, with Oculus, you have this option under Oculus 360 Photos of Explore the World, so you can go to basically any country. And people would do that, you know, they'd choose a country and go. And one thing everybody would say is, you mean I can travel and I don't even need to get a visa, you know? So that was the first thing that really kind of like got people so curious and so engaged. And I think that cuts across, you know, regardless of who you are or where you're from. Nigeria is not a known tourist destination right now, but there is actually quite a lot to see in the country. And most people don't realize. Calabar in the south of the country has possibly the greatest diversity when it comes to butterflies in the world. So things like that are not known and not explored per se, because it's not on the global map for tourism. But these are things that we can then start to experience via virtual reality. And that's looking at an angle like tourism. I mean, we can take it right down to the everyday, you know, to people's lives and stories, much like I think we've seen in a sense with YouTube and what, you know, vloggers have been able to create, but in a much more personal way now with VR and 360, that you can actually say, step into my home, step into my life. And I think we'll start to see more of those stories as we go on.
We have about 15 minutes left, and we have a question from mic number two.
Hi, thanks for the talk. Maybe learning is not a privilege only to young people, so did you consider teaching also older people or people from other areas? And also, are you reachable outside Facebook? Do you have some web page or something else?
Yes. So to address the last part first, yes, absolutely outside Facebook. If you do social media, we're on Twitter as Emisi3D and Instagram as Emisi3D as well. We have a website, emisi3d.com, and you can also email us at hello@emisi3d.com. In terms of reaching people beyond young people, yes, that's very, very important to us. Even as we preach things like, say, VR for schools, targeting students, we know that that is not possible if adoption doesn't happen across the board. We need the older people, we need teachers, we need principals to take it on board as well and want to work with the technology. So we embrace all. I mean, the targeted project might look like it's very student and young people focused, but we work across the board because we recognize stakeholders in all demographics.
We have two questions at mic number one. Let's start with the first one.
Thank you, Judith, for the fantastic presentation. I was wondering about, I've never heard, I think, VR and communal efforts and collective working together in such a beautiful way, because in the Global North, I think VR is in a lot of cases in the framework of hyper-individualized, even isolated, non-social as such an activity. So I think this was a brilliant new way of seeing the potential. Mm-hmm. I would be very interested in how you see that kind of maybe difference. Yeah. And if you think a lot about this isolation part as well.
Yeah. So thank you. I really believe that collaboration is the way forward. I think particularly in a place like Nigeria, you know, a place where you're already resource challenged, I think if you start the divisions early, then there are too many problems. And I think given the scope of these technologies, I mean, I think we haven't even begun to approach the boundaries of where they will be, where there's so much left to discover and explore, that we must come together to challenge ourselves and work together and push boundaries. And that there's, you know, enough scope for everybody to get involved. I see the individualism that you talk about in other parts. I mean, when I was first starting out, one of the challenges for me was just even the multiple platforms that exist, you know, and the fact that things couldn't be unified in one way that we could all tap into. I hope it will change, but you know, don't hold out too much. But I think where we can work and where we can actually impact stuff and effect change the way that we believe it should be, then we must.
One more question for microphone number one.
Thank you also from my side for your talk. Yeah. I do have a question more like personally. What was for you, since you started 2 years ago with this journey on VR in Nigeria, what was for you the most surprising thing in this journey?
The most surprising thing? I have never been asked that question, so I'm pausing for a moment to think. Not surprised in the traditional sense, but like a couple of months after I started, I was at an event where, Y Combinator had come to Nigeria. This was in September of 2016. So it was a year where quite a few people were interested in what was going on in Lagos. So Y Combinator had come to Nigeria for the first time. And in one of the business schools, they were having a talk, a session. And I was in the audience, and I just happened to look down, and in the row below me, there were two young men, and they had a phone, and they were actually watching like a 360, you know, video on it, you know, and stereoscopically, the screen was split. And I was like amazed. I tapped them and I said, you know, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, we're watching this. I'm like, do you have a headset? No. Have you ever put it in a headset? No, they hadn't. So luckily at that event, I had, you know, a stand in the exhibition space. And I said, well, during the break, come down and we'll put it in a headset for you so you can actually, you know, see it the way it was intended. And so, you know, during the break, they came, they did that. They were completely wowed. They, after that, you know, went out and bought a VR headset. But for me, why that stands out is because we started the lab because we felt like, you know, we must do this. This is time with these technologies. If we want to be part of the story, we get involved now. And I think that was a beautiful example of the reality of that.
And please don't hesitate if you're sitting in your chair thinking, I have something to ask, but I'm not quite sure if there'll be time. There is time for another few questions, so please get up behind the microphones if there is something you want to know. We have another question from microphone number two.
Thanks for the day. Again, you mentioned during one of the answer that one of the key indicator or cost for a school basically is the ratio of a student per teacher or professor. And then I'm wondering, if, let's say, imagine I'm managing a school and I'm considering VR as a solution, then yes, I have to consider my cost, but also what I get out of those different solutions. So which indicator is traditionally used in education, in the education system, would VR in the classroom improve the most?
Thank you. So for the VR for Schools project that I've talked about, where we're actually targeting public schools, the real target that we want to address with that is learning outcomes. We want to significantly improve learning outcomes with virtual reality and do this in a way where children are not learning about computers, from a book or just from hearing a teacher talk about it, but they can actually see one, that sort of thing, view one, operate it, where they're learning about, different experiments, not just by hearing it spoken about, but by actually being able to do it, in a sense, in that virtual space. So it's really learning outcomes that is the key indicator for us when it comes to the returns that we hope to see. But I think that we will see, depending on kind of like what school sector we're looking at, that change a little bit. So in the public schools, I think that it'll be easy to go in there and work targeting just learning outcomes. When we go to the private schools with a lot more resources, then it'll be more nuanced there because there'll be scope to do more things. For example, we will have schools where they can afford to set up labs to actually create virtual reality. And for them, some of the indicators that they might be looking at are, technical expertise in their students, that sort of thing.
And if we don't have any more questions, I think we should all thank Judith for an excellent talk.
Thank you.